Howdy, campers. It's Lauren Marie Taylor, and you are listening to the Not the Final Girl podcast. Alrighty, I had a couple of crickets join me in the background there for a split second. Today on the pod, I've got Eric Vitale. Eric and I are friends on Instagram, and he knows how much I love everything paranormal. So Eric has been on the show Ghost Loop as a paranormal investigator and an engineer. And this week he's got Haunted Connecticut coming out. It's really a fascinating look into one of the most haunted states in America. I reached out to Eric because, like I said, I love everything paranormal and I'm really into haunted houses, ghosts, anything that is creepy like that, that seems to be a part of a lot of our daily lives. I don't know about you, but I've seen my share of ghosts in my lifetime, sometimes creepy voices whispering things in my ears. So I thought it would be kind of fun to have Eric on the show for Spooky October. Thanks for listening, everybody. Let's go. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
You know, it's funny because we were talking about being fans of each other. I'm a big fan of paranormal investigations, and you're a fan of the Friday the 13th franchise. So we'll do a little bit of a roundtable about when each of us got interested in the other things. So when did you start watching the Friday franchise, and what are some of your memories growing up with Jason Voorhees, if you will?
Oh, wow. Well, when I was a kid, I actually started watching Friday the 13th movies. I was about 7 years old, actually.
Ooh, that's young.
Yeah. Well, my friends and I, like, we all knew who Jason was because Jason was like Santa Claus. Everybody knew who Jason was when I was a kid, even before I saw any of the films. So I remember I started telling my folks, you know, I want to watch these Friday the 13th movies. And then my parents shared a story, which sticks with me to this day. They actually saw the original in the movies, and when they came home, they were so scared. They checked all the closets, and all the doors and the windows were locked. But yeah, I was very young. I was 7 years old. My dad rented me the original film, but I already knew of Jason and the hockey mask. So watching the original film, I was a little confused because I'm like, well, where's Jason? And then I just kind of, you know, every time we went to the video store, he would rent me another one and another one. And actually, the first time I saw part two, I actually had to sneak up in the middle of the night. It was like a Saturday night. It was on like channel 5 at like 2 in the morning. And I remember part two really scaring me when I was a kid. There's something about Sackhead Jason. To this day, it's just like, I love that movie. There's something about the original and part two. The ambiance. Maybe it's because they were filmed on the East Coast, like the cinematography. Those movies are classics. I absolutely love the first two. To this day, they're comfort food for me.
And, you know, even the whole idea of a summer camp and being attacked when it's supposed to be the most fun of your summer. And here you've got to worry about some dude with a machete or an ice pick or whatever. So if you could look back at your younger self, because like you said, you were 7 years old when you first started to see the series. Did Pamela Voorhees in any way make you start thinking about haunted places and the paranormal?
Yeah, I was always kind of into like woods. Woods were always spooky to me. Mm-hmm. Friday the 13th just added that, you know, added to it for me. But it's funny you bring that up because a case that I actually worked on years ago, it was this haunted woods in New Jersey, actually. Uh-huh. These wood, Borg's Woods. And it's a mess of a case. We kept going back and investigating throughout the years. But yeah, woods, something about the woods, they're scary, you know? It's like, what's hiding in the woods?
Absolutely. I mean, I know you're from New Jersey originally, right?
Yeah, I grew up in New Jersey and I currently live in Connecticut.
Okay, in haunted Connecticut, of course, but we'll talk about that later. But I agree with you about the woods because we live along the Catskill Corridor. And so there are a lot of ancient burial grounds from before the Europeans got here. And then there's the whole Revolutionary War and,
yes,
you know, lakes by being succubuses of soldiers and pulling them into tides and bringing them out to the Hudson River. So we've got quite a few paranormal things going on here. In fact, I could tell you this real quick. At 11:11 every night, there is a spirit that goes past the family room in my house. And I'll go and ask you about this first because it is kind of funny. So I know Lorraine Warren, big fan, of course.
Okay.
She said that if your you're frightened of these spirits, right? That could attract something harmful. Okay, so this ghost that I've seen go past, it doesn't feel like it's, you know, anything demonic, but I'm wondering if it feels my fear and I'm walking my dogs at 11:11 at night, let's say, and I start to feel my fearful of it. Do you think this ghost is eventually just going to pull my pants down just to scare the crap out of me?
No, but what I do think from just this little bit of information you gave me, you say every night at 11:11, you see this ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Every night. Mm-hmm. Every night at 11:11, doesn't skip a beat. What that sounds like to me, it could be a residual haunting, and it's actually not a ghost. What a residual haunting is, it's basically like a, how do I word this right? I don't, kind of like a time stamp.
Okay.
Like it's just imprinted, it's like an imprint in the area. So let's say, I don't know the history of your house, but let's say 100 years ago, there was a family that lived there, and there was a man. Do you know if it's a male or a female spirit?
There's one that I've seen that it was actually caught on our security camera. I think I may have sent it to you. I'm not sure. That is a female.
Okay. So let's say this particular female walked through that area of the house thousands of times, and then she passed away. She left an imprint on the area, and it's almost like pressing play on a tape, and it just keeps replaying, and that's called a residual haunting. It's not actually a ghost. It's just an imprint in the area, and it just keeps happening almost, you know, like a loop. It just keeps going and going and going, and every night at 11:11, that sounds like a residual haunting to me.
Yeah, and it's not something to be concerned about, obviously.
No, because when it comes to a spirit feeding off of your energy, that's when you're talking about, like, the dark stuff, like something demonic. When you're scared and you're giving off that fear out into the atmosphere, it's going to feed off that, and it's going to give it more power to create stronger manifestations. Mm-hmm. This sounds like a residual haunting. No one's ever been hurt in your home, correct?
Nope, not at all.
All right. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it.
How early in your life were you aware that there were spirits amongst us? And at what point did you decide, hey, I want to try this. I want to do paranormal investigations.
When I was around 10 years old, I used to always go to my aunt and uncle's house. They lived in this beautiful big colonial home in a small town in New Jersey. And the house was haunted. And I never experienced anything, but I remember asking my cousins, there was a family tree that my cousin Danny made. He was closest to my age, but there was somebody else on the family tree and it said Murmur. And I said, who's Murmur? And they're like, oh, that's Danny's imaginary friend. Well, as time would go on, they would tell me, like, you know, the house is actually haunted, and they would talk to me about experiences that they had, like, you know, the water turning on and off in the shower and just feelings of dread. And I was always intrigued, kind of scared, but very much interested. And as time went on, you know, I was the introverted kid that'd rather go hang out in a cemetery on a Friday night and then go to a house party or go to like haunted locations. Pretty much, there was a book we would always get called Weird New Jersey.
Oh yeah.
And we would just all right, we're gonna go here tonight and hang out. So I started doing that, and I found out about Ed Lorraine Warren, and I read all the books, and then, you know, the Conjuring movie started, and that blew up. And you know, I just kind of, you know, you meet certain people and then you start going out and you start investigating on your own. This cemetery is haunted. All right, I'm going to go. I'm going to try and gather some evidence. And before you know it, you're doing residential cases. You're helping families. And now it's been like 10 years of me doing this. And it's just been a really interesting journey, because I never got into it for like fame, because there's people that get into it. It's like, oh man, I could like get on TV, because there's tons of paranormal TV shows.
Yeah.
I just found it interesting. You know, one thing just led to another. I mean, I think it was 2018, I was contacted by a production company, and they were putting together a show. And I just remember saying to myself, if I don't take this opportunity, I'm going to kick myself in the ass later.
Was that Ghost Loop?
That was Ghost Loop.
Yeah.
We filmed they actually put together a sizzle trailer with footage we all sent in individually. They shopped it around, mm-hmm. and then Travel Channel offered us contracts. And I'm like, wait a minute here. Like, are you kidding me? Like, we're going to have a TV show on the same channel as like Ghost Adventures and all these other shows. So that happened.
Did you guys all know each other beforehand or know of each other?
Yeah, they kind of pulled us together like a boy band. I hate to say it like that. It's like, look at all these pretty faces. We want to sell you. All right. Yeah, we traveled America for 2 months.
What was that like to travel around America doing that?
It was, It was a crazy time. It was a really crazy time for me because, I mean, 2 months away from home, I just wanted to come back home and, like, tell my girlfriend I love her, who's now my wife.
Oh, sweet. Oh, that's right. Congratulations on that. That was...
Thank you.
Yeah, not too long ago.
Yeah, actually coming up on a year.
Yeah.
Time flies. But, yeah, it was just a wild time because I never really did much traveling, to be honest with you. Like, I spent some time in Europe when I was younger with friends, but... They bounced us all over America. I mean, I spent a couple weeks in Texas, Alabama, Utah, Washington, Illinois. It was really cool. But, you know, I just took it for what it was. I didn't really think too far into the future because I didn't want to get ahead of myself because these paranormal shows, they come and go. And, I mean, we filmed the season. We filmed 8 episodes. It was a great experience, but that was that one season. But, you know, I'll always have that. It's like I filmed a show for Travel Channel. It's still on Discovery Plus, which is cool. But it was a cool experience. I would definitely do it again, you know, if I had the right people with me. I mean, great crew. We were going into people's homes and helping them resolve the issues that they were dealing with because of these hauntings. Mm-hmm. But, we were together flying hotels, you know, hanging out all the time. And by the end of those 2 months, I mean, I was pretty burnt out.
Yeah, I'm sure it runs its course, but also you were probably burnt out just from the experience. I mean, how much religion is involved with these investigations?
Well, yeah, it took its toll on me. Anytime I'm dealing with spirits going on an investigation, I am so drained. And like my wife prepares herself, like I'm going out on a case. All right, well, you're going to be out of commission for a couple of days. It just drains me. But I was raised Catholic. And I mean, I believe in Jesus. I pray every night. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in everything that's in the Bible. I'm not really big on organized religion. I always make sure I have holy water with me, like when I go on these cases. That's very important to me because you're opening yourself up when you're communicating with spirits, and you never know what's going to come through. You know, I always say you want to try and communicate with Aunt Tilly. Well, a demon might come through, and you got to be prepared for that.
Well, have you ever been afraid that a spirit might attach itself to you and just, you know, hitch a ride home?
Yeah, but I know that God is more powerful than any devil or demon, and I also don't like to show fear. In a way, it's kind of like undermining the power of God. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. When you get into this stuff, it's like anything can happen. And
yeah.
I've seen some really wild stuff. It's not really like it is in the movies, but it's interesting, to say the least.
So when you do these investigations, are there specific or different methods or protocols involved?
Yeah, I like to go in there and usually I talk to the client before I go.
Uh-huh.
We'll talk on the phone, they'll explain things to me. So when I get there, I kind of already know what I'm getting myself into.
Mm-hmm.
But I ask a bunch of questions. Like it's like therapy. It's like I need to crack you open and spill you out. And I'm most likely going to ask you some uncomfortable questions, mm-hmm. but you have to be honest with me because I need to get to the bottom of things, because most of the time it's not paranormal. You know, I need to know how your relationship is with your significant other. I need to know if you're using drugs. I need to know about your past, if you ever dabbled with any type of magic, if you ever used a Ouija board. There's a bunch of questions that I ask. And then if I feel it's necessary to validate the claims of what you say is going on, that's when I'll jump into, okay, I'm going to experiment with some of this equipment. I think a lot of people hear, oh, paranormal investigator, and they think, well, we're going to run into your house with like 50 cameras and, you know, all this equipment. That's part of it, but it's not necessary, because you got to remember, years ago, there was none of this equipment. It like existed years ago. You would just go in and sit around and see if something would happen and take pictures and use a video camera that you actually had to put a cassette tape into.
Right. Which is in the Conjuring movie, of course.
Yeah, because, you know, Ed and Lorraine started in 1952.
Yeah.
But yeah.
What kind of equipment do you use when you go into the houses?
I'm really big on something that's called ITC research, which means intertransmental communication. I use something called a spirit box.
Okay.
Basically, it's a hacked radio.
Okay.
And it scans radio frequencies, you know, AM, FM frequency.
Uh-huh.
And the theory is the spirits can speak. They can manipulate the white noise, basically.
Oh.
And I really enjoy that. I do that a lot, actually. That's like my go-to. There's so much equipment. I actually don't bother with cameras too much, just because of the day and age we live in. Like, I've got like a really expensive iPhone. So if I want to take pictures, I use my iPhone.
So when they have these images, you know how they'll, like Bathsheba, let's say, in The Conjuring, yeah. when they have these images on the show Ghost Loop, they'll have faces and whatnot. Are those images depicted based on what the homeowners have told you they've seen? Or do you actually see those images?
There's stuff that they create for the show, but it's not for the sake of, we need to fancy up the show. It's like they give an example, like, okay, this is what's happening, and they'll create something. Mm-hmm. But it's a TV show, and nobody wants to see, like, five investigators sitting in a house for 45 minutes and nothing happens. They need to, you know, well, this is what they say is happening. Now we're going to show you footage of them investigating. And that's how we do it.
Yeah. What's a trigger environment? I've heard that expression thrown around a lot.
Well, that's what Ghost Loop was based on. Basically, a trigger environment or trigger objects. Let me give you an example. Someone committed suicide. Well, the gun is still in the house, and we're going to use that gun as a trigger object to lure the spirit in, to communicate objects that were very prominent to those person, to the people when they were alive. A musician has a guitar, and then the mm-hmm. musician died. Well, we have his guitar still. Mm-hmm. Let's see if we could communicate and use this as a trigger object.
Yeah, you would never use a Ouija board. I mean, okay, let me ask you about the Ouija board then.
Sure.
You know, everybody wants a Ouija board. I don't know if they want it for Christmas or not, but I remember our kids always wanted a Ouija board. And because of my experiences as a young girl and as a teenager, I just said absolutely not. Are store-bought Ouija boards really inviting?
Yeah, they all are. I mean, you could make a Ouija board yourself. You could just, you know, take a piece of paper and write it all out. If the intent is there, anything's possible. And I personally don't use them. I experimented once when I was 18 years old with my friends, but that was before I was into the paranormal. You know, I was trying to conjure up the spirit of Cliff Burton, the, you know, Metallica's first bass player that was killed.
right.
But I never used them as a tool mm-hmm. to investigate, to each their own. It's just one of the few things I won't participate in as an investigator.
And what about people who, let's say they go to visit these sites in New Jersey or anywhere else, any historic site that has a reputation of being haunted? What do you think about people who go there and bait the spirits to try to get them, to try to draw them out and say, I want to see you?
I mean, I always tell people spiritual protection is the most important. Just be respectful, because one day you're going to be on the other side, and spirits our energy. It's like we're spirits, but we still are in the earthly realm. So once we shed like our mortal coil, we're the same as the spirits that we're going out trying to make contact with. You know what I mean? So just be respectful. Be respectful, and spiritual protection is key, because you never know what's going to come through.
So what does it mean when a ghost tags you?
I've actually never heard of that. Maybe they're talking about an attachment. Spirit is just attracted to your energy.
Yeah.
I usually call them tag-alongs. I've definitely had spirits follow me home. And
I mean, what do you do? Did you say get lost? I mean,
oh, my God. I've had so many experiences. Like, I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I investigated this haunted house, the Virgin House. A lot of spirits in that house residing, and there's a story of this one spirit, a female who would get, like, real flirty with the boys. And when I got home that night, I was laying in bed, I was falling asleep, and clear as day, I heard a very enticing female voice whisper in my left ear, Eric. And I'm like, oh, seriously? Like, I'm not in the mood. So, and, you know, throw some holy water around, bless yourself, say a prayer, and that's that.
What's the scariest thing you've ever experienced as a paranormal investigator?
Oh, my God. There was a case, I actually brought it up to you earlier, Borgs Woods in New Jersey. When I was a kid, we always heard stories about Borgs Woods being haunted, and there's been satanic cults that have gone in there and done rituals, and it was kind of like an urban legend type thing. And when we got older, it was like, we should go check that out. We should go investigate those woods. And it just turned into like this huge thing. I just can't believe all the things that we experienced there. We were there one night, we were doing a spirit box session, and a really nasty voice came out, and it said, gonna make them sick. And it was myself and another investigator and two females. Well, these two females all of a sudden like went into a trance and started
throwing
up all over the place.
No.
And then we rushed them out, blessed them. And then I went back by myself a couple days later, and I provoked because I was upset because one of the girls was actually my girlfriend at the time. This is back in like 2016, mm-hmm. and I started provoking, and I'm using my equipment, and I'm like, "Who's here? What's in these woods?" And then a voice came out and said, "Satan." And all of a sudden, this like really bad feeling came over me, and I'm like, "Oh man, all right, I gotta bail. I gotta get out of here." And I left. And I just didn't feel myself for a couple of days. I think something dark latched on to me. I hate to jump to conclusions and say demonic.
Right.
But something definitely was messing with me. And about a week later, I woke up. I used to work third shift, so I'd like wake up at like 2-3 in the afternoon. I woke up and like my neck was burning. And I looked in the mirror and I had slash marks across my neck. So something there was definitely not enjoying me going there and provoking. And I threw holy water all over the place. It was, in the woods. And it just kept going on and on. Every time we would go there, this thing would show itself. Like, we had an investigator with us that said he had psychic abilities. And it's like, it's demonic. And it looks like a pig. And it just kept messing with me. And one day, about 3 o'clock in the morning, just the devil's hour. The devil's hour, because Jesus was crucified on the cross during the day. So the opposite is the devil's hour, 3 in the morning. It's a mockery of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. I was laying in bed, and I heard this demonic spirit telepathically speak to me, and it said something. It was blood-curdling, and then my bed shook.
Oh, my God.
That was the scariest thing that has ever happened to me during this whole journey as a paranormal investigator. And I've kind of put it all behind me. I've never gone back there. It's like I moved out of Jersey. There's no reason for me to go back there and poke the bear.
No.
But it's like, what was that? What was that? A human spirit doesn't have that much energy to like telepathically project words into my mind. It was so scary. This is when you're dealing with something dark that's very powerful.
Yeah, and it wasn't like you were at a sleepover with a bunch of your friends and they're all trying to get on your case.
No, not at all.
Yeah, so
this thing spoke to me and shook my bed. Oh my God. That was definitely very frightening.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
I have a friend, Tom, who wanted to know if you've ever investigated a church or a funeral home, and if so, which is creepier?
Never a church, but it's funny you bring a funeral home, because the documentary film that I got coming out next month, actually, October 11th, one of the locations was a haunted funeral home in Derby, Connecticut. So that's definitely creepy.
Well, since we're on the subject, can you tell us anything about Haunted Connecticut without obviously giving away any spoilers or anything like that?
Sure. Well, long story short, Tony Cadwell, who is the director of it, we found each other on social media. He saw me on Ghost Loop. I saw that he directed another movie called Balsam, and Kane Hodder was the star of it, actually.
Of course.
So, yeah, it was a paranormal documentary about a haunted hotel, and Kane Hodder's actually involved with the paranormal. So I'm like, this is so cool. And we got to talking, and he's like, well, I want to fly to Connecticut and film with you. All right, sure. So we filmed together at a couple different haunted locations, and the funeral home was one of them, actually. And it's a pretty active location. I mean, you're dealing with they're constantly bringing bodies in and out.
Oh, so it's still working. It's still a real
funeral. Yeah, in fact, one of the nights we were there, there was a body laid out and, like, ready to be viewed the next morning.
Oh. Was there a family that was living at this funeral home, and did anything happen to them?
Yeah, I mean, like, years ago, apparently there was, like, I don't want to get too into it, but there was, like, botched operations that went on involving women way, 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 way back in the day.
And
there's just there's a lot of stuff going on. I've been growled at in the attic. That was quite the experience. It's stuff like that, like, that's, you want to experience that as a paranormal investigator. Because, it's a little bit of a thrill when you do this stuff. But like I said, keep yourself safe.
Yeah, yeah. And when does that come out?
October 11th, and you can pre-order it now if you're interested in DVDs. It's on a bunch of websites, Amazon.com, BestBuy.com, Walmart.
All the big ones.
Yeah.
What are some other places that you have done research into? I mean, you always think about asylums or old hospitals. Have you ever gone into one of those?
Yeah, we used to go to this place a lot in New York called Letchworth Village.
Yes, oh my gosh.
Oh my, Letchworth Village, ah, boy.
Tell me about it.
That place is, I curse like a sailor.
You can curse, yeah.
That place is so fucking haunted, it's not even funny. Oh my God. All that bad energy, the way people were treated, rapes, murders.
Oh my
God. Not to mention after it was closed down and people would sneak in and do Ouija board sessions and try and conjure up energy. I mean, I've investigated in there numerous times. I've been there at least 20 times.
Oh my God.
I found burnt Bibles in there. I found dead animals in there.
So it's become a place where people go and do satanic rituals?
Everybody knows it's haunted because it's been on Ghost Adventures and other paranormal TV shows. And it's abandoned, and they try their best to keep it, they plywood over the windows and stuff like that. But kids, they bash holes through it.
And yeah.
They want to go in and investigate, and I've experienced so much in there. It's not even funny. I remember, I think it was the first time I was there. I went in with a couple of my friends and, we're investigating. I got equipment and I'm using this piece of equipment. It's called a K2 meter. It, basically measuring electromagnetic fields. Spirits are made of electromagnetic energy. And as soon as I went in, this thing just the whole thing lit up.
Really?
I mean, I've been scratched in there. Oh. I've had other friends get scratched in there. I've seen dark shadow figures dash across the floor. You can feel the energy change when you're in there. There's one room in particular, you just can't breathe when you're in there. You're just totally out of breath. And I took there's a photo I have from years ago. We were leaving and it's a full on shadow figure, head, shoulders, arms, legs.
Oh my God.
It's incredible. I haven't been there in a while.
Now, isn't it ironic because I know the area and there's a Catholic shrine right down the hill from Letchworth Village.
Mm-hmm. There's a tiny little church. There's a parking lot there. And there's I don't know if people still go to the church, but there's a tiny church. People usually park there. And people walk their dogs there all the time.
And can I tell you something else?
Sure.
Some of the Native Americans, every year they have a big powwow there.
Wow. There's a lot of buildings there still. There's a lot of buildings. And there's actually a cemetery on the property, too, that I've investigated. And it's literally hundreds of crosses with numbers because they're just people that went unaccounted for. They don't know their names. It's so sad. That's a really depressing area. In fact, if I remember, there's a huge plaque as soon as you walk in with the names, but it's parents would just drop their kids off if they had a mental disability. It just disowns them. A lot of that went on at Letchworth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sad.
Yeah, it's a sad time in New York State history for sure. Have there ever been any states on the West Coast that you've been to?
I mean, I pretty much stick on the East Coast, but when I did Ghost Loop, I obviously traveled, but that was from the show. I don't go out of my way to travel across the country to go to locations unless unless somebody reaches out to me and they really need my help.
Uh-huh.
But it's really just East Coast, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we're all born with a sensitivity to the supernatural? My grandmother used to say that she and I had mental telepathy. Do you think that we're born with that? And then like a muscle, if you don't use it, you lose it?
Absolutely. I think because I've noticed the more I do this work and the more you open yourself up and keep yourself open to the spirit realm, the more you're going to experience things. So yeah, I do believe that. Absolutely.
What's the difference, by the way, between an empath and a psychic?
Well, an empath, I'm an empath.
Okay.
A lot of people are empaths. You basically just, you feel other people's energies. And if you're in a room with a bunch of people, you get drained. I'm usually pretty drained after I'm around people that are negative. You could get drained from their energy. You could feel other people's energy. But a psychic is somebody that could communicate with spirits psychically. They could hear them. They don't need to use equipment. They could communicate with them psychically and speak to them and hear them and communicate with them.
And that's something that you've seen people do?
Yes. There's been so many, I can't even start to think about them though, to be honest. Just so many times where spirits channeling themselves through people, and then they're acting, you know, different. And it's like, whoa, what's going on here?
All right, here we go. So when I was when I was in high school, I read the book Amityville Horror, right?
Okay.
And they talked about how if you smell feces in a house, then that means the house is haunted. Or an animal, if it barks at nothing, let's say you're in a room, it just starts barking. And it's not barking just to hear itself bark. It's barking because it senses something.
Yes.
How true is that?
I mean, it is true. I mean, I would guess, if my dog barks in the corner, it's not like there's definitely a ghost there, but definitely puts me on high alert. But yeah, animals can sense that stuff 100%. But as far as like smelling something like feces or like rotting flesh, that's not a human spirit. Then you're dealing with a nasty, you know, but something demonic.
I guess that means my cat's poop and the litter, they're all demonic. But that book really got to me. I was afraid of living in a private house, and I swore that I would never purchase a house in my life because I just assumed all houses were haunted or had demonic spirits. So on that, if I'm going to buy a house, let's say in Massachusetts or in Connecticut or in one of your haunted areas of New Jersey, at what point do I say, all right, I'm out of this house? Like, I'm not going to live in this house anymore. It's got to be haunted.
Once people and animals are being harmed, then it's like, okay, we need to figure out what is going on here, or we're out of here. We need to get out of here. But then you really got to get to the bottom of it, you know, because sometimes you can move and these things could follow you.
So then you have to bring in people such as yourselves to confirm it. Right.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Or just go right to your church. But sometimes priests don't want to help you, unfortunately.
Right.
And that really upsets me. Like if you reached out to me and said, Eric, you know, I moved into a new house. There's definitely something here. Could you come and bless my house? I would do that for you. I actually still do that to this day.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've done blessings on homes, you know, the whole nine yards with the holy water and blessed salt and making the sign of the cross on all the doorways with holy oil and burning blessed incense because, you know, you're invoking the spirit of Jesus Christ. And I feel like anybody could do that, not just a priest.
Uh-huh.
A priest, you know, he's just a normal man. I feel like anyone could do that. And a lot of investigators do that. And that's what makes me the most happy when I could, you know, help someone be their safety net and go in and help them out and do a house blessing and clear it of the negative energy and whatever is lurking in there.
It's different than buying a house and getting a sage stick as a gift, right?
Yeah, I mean, sage, I mean, I've never personally used sage, but I've always heard, like, sage is just like putting a Band-Aid on it. It doesn't work that well. My experience, like, it's just going to piss off a demon. Like, you need to bring in the big guns and holy water and, you know, blessed objects instead of just burning sage. So
yeah,
that's my personal opinion.
I like the way you said piss off a demon. That's the last thing you want to do is piss off a demon. When you're in a horror movie, there are certain do's and don'ts, right?
Yep.
You know, like, don't walk alone in the woods. Don't go into a scary looking cabin. Don't go into the shed. Exactly. Don't go skinny dipping. Don't go up the stairs when your boyfriend's in a wheelchair and you know
don't
that.
Don't
smoke pot. Don't change into ugly brown undies. I mean, just the whole plethora of do's and don'ts. And it sounds like it's the same thing when you're talking about going into one of these homes or a hospital or a funeral home that does have some presence. There are do's and don'ts, yeah.
Yeah, like you definitely don't want to provoke when you're in like an abandoned location or like a haunted cemetery. But if you're in a home and you're trying to provide evidence to validate the claims of a haunting, you got to provoke and get that evidence and then present it to the church to bring in the big guns. Because maybe you might need an exorcism on that home. You know, you don't just do exorcisms on people. They can also be done to homes. There's a whole lot that goes into just this whole field. It's very fascinating.
It really is. So when we talk about homes, can a house be haunted without having a demonic presence?
Well, yeah. I mean, that you're dealing with human spirits. You know, example, a family died in a house fire. You know, those people, if they want to remain there and not cross over, they'll stay in the house. And as human spirits, we call it earthbound. Okay. Sometimes people can't cross over because they feel like they have unfinished business on Earth and they want to stick around, or maybe they are guilty of something they did when they were alive and they don't feel like they're worthy enough to go to heaven. So sometimes investigators will help them cross over and go to the light.
And then there's the opposite, the inhuman spirits that we were talking about.
Yeah, demonic spirits. Okay. I mean, there's just so much stuff. Everything from, you know, human spirits, demonic spirits, and then I'm very interested in, like, extraterrestrials and cryptids, which, for lack of a better term, you know, monsters. There's just so much stuff. There really is. Look, you don't have to, like, go to school and get a degree and say, well, I'm a paranormal investigator now. Essentially, anyone could go buy some equipment and start doing this on their own. And I think that's why there's so many people out there doing this. And that's why it's really important, if you've got a problem, make sure you know who you're inviting into your home and it's not just some kid that wants to get popular on YouTube, because there's a lot of that going on right now. Mm-hmm. And it just upsets me. It almost makes me want to, like, take a few steps back, because it's like, look at all of this that's going on right now. It's almost like the field's become a joke. It's just so many, like, anybody can go out there with their hot pink spirit box and make a video and put it on YouTube. And it's like, that's not what it's about. Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. If you could give advice to people out there who are honestly interested in becoming a paranormal investigator, what advice would you give?
I would tell them to try and do some research and find people that are credible. Doesn't necessarily have to mean people that were on TV, but people that have been doing it for a long time, and learn from someone that's done it for a while, and just make sure you're grounded, you're spiritually grounded. Like I said before, spiritual protection is very important. I always make sure I have holy water with me. Don't just go out there and start screaming in a graveyard, oh, what's here? Show yourself. Because it's not what it's about. You know, you could easily get hurt doing this stuff.
And if anybody has any questions for you, where can they find you, online or at social media?
Where am I? I'm everywhere. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I think I'm EVMetal81 on Instagram. GhostDude81 on TikTok.
Well, thank you, Eric, for being with us today. We really appreciate it. You officially scared the shit out of me for the rest of the day.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. This has been an honor. Thank you so much.
A spooky thank you once again to Eric Vitale for sharing his time with us. You can find him on Twitter at EricVitale13. On Instagram, it's EVMetal81. And don't forget to check out Haunted Connecticut. I've seen some outtakes from it, and it really looks amazing, especially for this month of October, our favorite month. Once again, thank you to Tom, Anne, and Julie for being Patreons of the show. If you'd like to be a sponsor and help support the show, you can find me at patreon.com/notthefinalgirlpodcast, and you can see all the different kinds of swag you can get on a monthly basis. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to keep your doors locked and stay out of the woods, especially this month.